This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
It is BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Good morning, it's me, Rich Bradbury, and welcome to Open for Business. This is the show that dives deep into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. And today on the show, we'll be taking a look at some of the innovative strides in sustainable waste management. I've got Marjun Kit, founder and CEO of BioLoop. They're a pioneering startup transforming Malaysia's palm oil waste landscape. BioLoop utilizes black soldier fly larvae, BSFL, to convert organic waste into valuable protein for aquaculture and animal feeds, significantly reducing ecological damage and greenhouse gas emissions. With over 8,000 metric tons of waste processed, BioLoop not only enhances Malaysia's environmental sustainability, but also boosts the economy by creating new jobs and producing organic fertilizers. Now, along the course of this conversation, Me and Junkit will be he'll be helping us digest the global potential of BSFL technology and its economic and environmental impact, how BioLoop is unique in this market, and what's in the pipeline for their solutions enterprise to help Malaysia position itself as a leader in sustainable agriculture. And in the meantime, if you have any thoughts or questions you'd like to ask me or the guests today, get us on our U-Mobile WhatsApp number. It is 018-789-8888. Or reach out to us on X at BFM Radio. Junkit, welcome to the show.
Very good morning. Thank you for having me on it.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You've traveled quite the way to get here today, though, right?
Well, I traveled in last night. The factory is in Perak, so it's only about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive. Yeah. Not too far, but you know.
You don't want to be doing that in traffic on a Friday. Right?
I would not.
You don't want to be dealing with that. Okay, so me and you had a bit of a chat this morning before you came here into the studio. And what you're doing now is significantly different to what you were doing during just a couple of years ago.
Right.
Give me a little bit of background about yourself first.
Sure thing. So, studied engineering, never practiced it.
Okay.
Went into banking as my first job in venture capital, actually. And whilst in venture capital, I was working in London in a bank called Barclays, and you really see a lot of financial technology deals flying around in the EU. And what was very interesting was that all of a sudden I saw big, big deals being done in agriculture, people raising more than $200 million. And I thought to myself, why? What for? And I found out that it was to cultivate insects, and the money was being used to build really efficient climate control environments, because these insects, the black soldier fly larvae, operate well in tropical conditions. Mm-hmm. Now, in a four nations country, you can't get tropical conditions unless it's at a very expensive price, hence the big amount of money they had to raise. So during the pandemic, I managed to work from home from Malaysia, and I thought to myself, you know, why not give it a try? I then pulled a friend over and we thought, let's try it at a backyard, the pilot scale. It could work. And it could work at a far lower price.
Because you already have the temperature, you already have everything you need.
Exactly that. So then we took the plunge, left our jobs, and then we started BioLoop in Perak.
Hang on a minute. You can't just say we took the plunge, we left our jobs. That conversation that you had with your friend, right?
Yes.
Before, as you kind of brought him into the business, what were the talking points of it? You sat him down and you say, look, I've seen X amount of money moving into agriculture. I know this is something that might sound crazy when I first pitch it to you, but I want to grow black fly larva.
I think that was 90% of the conversation. You nailed it already. And I think in early stages, it was not that the technology was sound. It wasn't. It wasn't that it was a super exciting thing. Mm. It may not have been, but it was more of, we think this can be done. It's meaningful. It's impactful. Mm. So let's do it, right? People our age tend to do more other tech-heavy ventures,
yes.
Software,
yes.
Fintech, you know, other parts of ag tech will probably be in drones. So we thought this really goes back to more primary industries. And during the pandemic, food security was a big, big thing.
Still is.
Still is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Feed costs were rising, fertilizer costs were rising. So it just made sense. We need to get our hands dirty. But that's what you wanted to do anyway.
Right.
And that's where the value came in.
Is there a sense for you then that you genuinely feel like you are giving something back as well? Because when you move from doing something digitally,
yes.
To using your digits, if you like, there is a different feeling. There's a different feeling in your chest, in your heart, when you're actually doing something physical, correct?
Correct. So the process is one part where your output is directly proportional to your input in terms of a physical manner.
Exactly.
But also, you produce a product. And when you see customers using that product, it inspires you in a way that's different from, quote unquote, being a cog in a very big corporate.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, I think, very, very motivational. And until now, when we talk to our customers, when we improve our product and when they give us feedback to make it better, how we can help their crops a bit more, how we can help their livestock a bit more, I think it's just so fulfilling to be able to help them get to where they need to be.
Had you been entrepreneurial, do you think, before this? Or was this like, is this your first kind of real venture?
This is indeed my first real venture. Was I entrepreneurial before this? I wouldn't say so. You know, very
typical. I
think
everybody has a little bit of that spirit, though.
Well, I hope so. And I hope it's manifesting now. but growing up, very standard, you know, do well in school, you know, get decent grades, go to a decent university, get a decent job. But I think over time, you cultivate this network of friends who spur you on to try to achieve something greater. And I think that my friends, my friend group, they are quite entrepreneurial themselves. They are high achievers and they're also very supportive. So going into this venture, I received tremendous support from my network, from my family as well. So I thought, why not? You know, I'm quite young. If I fail, I'll still be very young. I'll probably be able to pick myself up, dust my knees, move forward, start something else,
right,
or go back to the job market. The risk was not too great for me. And I think that if I hadn't done it, it would have been one of my largest regrets.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think your time overseas helped kind of temper your decision a little bit, where you thought maybe, because you see, I don't know, I think there's a different set of thinking when you step out of your comfort zone into a different country, different cultures that you're kind of experiencing. Do you think that might have kind of spurred you on a little bit?
I'll be lying if I said no, because I think typically, as mentioned just now, when you're on that very well-trodden path, you tend to just, you know, keep your head down, put the work in, and hopefully you get a decent life out of it. Being in London, I guess like being in the US or being in different parts of China where innovation is so rife, you get to see technologies that you didn't even knew existed.
Right.
And this is something, you know, when I looked at the deal flow last time, that's also what I saw. So when that gives you a sense of purpose, where you think to yourself, hey, I could probably do this, and I could probably do it better than my peers in those eight parts of the world. Not because obviously I'm better than them, but because the environment in Malaysia is superior for this particular technology than the environment in a Four Seasons nation. Then that is when you think, hey, perhaps there is something to it. So working in London, you tend to meet people who are generally quite high confident. They will chase what they set out to chase. They will, you know, I don't like to say it, but they'll fake it till they make it sort of. That sort of mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of rubs off on you.
There's an element of survival of the fittest in London, for
Correct. But I'm also a bit naive. And I think that naivety did help me. Because if I knew how difficult it would have been, would I have still done it? Probably yes, but I would have taken more time to think. But I think being naive and being able to, you know, hit the walls and get back up, I think that was something that was very, very crucial to the survival of BioLoop until today.
So at the kind of beginning stages of BioLoop and you're thinking of forming this company, what was the, I guess, the outcome that you were picturing? Was it, I want to do something sustainable, or was it, I think there's profit here, or was it, let's be honest, you know, because you know, a business is a business, you know, or is it a combination of the two?
It has to be a combination of the two. So I think sustainability was secondary. The first one was it meaningful to me?
Right.
Was it meaningful to what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve? So that's the first part. Profitability of the business has to be a close second, because it could be meaningful, but if it's not profitable, you're probably doing a charity.
Yeah.
And that's not what I wanted to do.
Okay.
So obviously, I wanted to be able to support my family. And being in that mindset, what I chose to do in agriculture, in Black Soldier Fly, really fit the bill. So it so happens that it's sustainable. And I guess we naturally tended towards ideas and solutions that were a bit more sustainable, because that is the future, right? People are going to get more sustainable. The world is not going to get any cleaner without our help.
Yeah.
So then that was just a natural course of action. But it was number one, meaning and purpose. Number two, closely followed by profitability of the business and why I thought that my team and I could outcompete if we were faced with anyone else in the world.
Mm. I think consumers need to really start understanding that sustainability is literally the only way forward.
Yes.
As we look at food consumption habits right now, as we look at food security issues right now, as we look at climate change right now, there are things unusual, perhaps, like BioLoop. It's not your most conventional of businesses, yeah, you know, but something like this at the start of the food chain is something that's going to have great impact over time. Right?
Yes, exactly so. And hence, our key mission is to feed the world sustainably.
Mm.
So at BioLoop, we do it via two ways. The first is by revolutionizing the way we manage our waste.
Yeah.
So when we think about how much waste goes to landfills, it's actually quite mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So just some quick numbers, 6.2 million tons of food waste and 1.2 million tons of agricultural waste go to the landfill every year. To put it into context, it's like KLCC being filled from floor to ceiling every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm,
or an Olympic-sized pool being filled up every day. So it's highly, highly unsustainable. So instead of letting it degrade and decompose in a landfill, emitting greenhouse gases, emitting your carbon dioxide and methane to the atmosphere, we feed it to the worms instead.
Mm.
And the worms will store that carbon as larval biomass. And they do it in a much quicker rate as well. So that's the first part where we revolutionize the way we manage organic waste.
Mm.
Then the second part is by providing nutritious and sustainable food solutions. So as they consume whatever waste you might give to them, they grow. They grow, they pack in protein. After a certain time, we'll harvest them and use them, dry them up as animal feed. So it is high quality protein, very good amino acid profile, and it's highly sustainable. But that is only one part of the equation because we still have crops, right? So in terms of waste management, whilst they're eating the waste, they also excrete something we call FRAS, which is an organic fertilizer, potent as well as very good for enhancing soil fertility,
mm-hmm,
soil productivity, and soil health. So this is the way we try to attack both the food security point of view from the protein shortfall as well as from the chemical fertilizer usage. Can we reduce both of them?
Mm. Okay, let's take a short break. Folks, I'm here in the studio with Majun Kit. He's the founder and CEO of BioLoops and Darren Bahad. We're going to take a short break here on Open for Business. This is the show that dives deep into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Big Front Man, BFM 89.9.
It is BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Rich Bradbury. Welcome back to Open for Business. This is the show that dives deep into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. We are taking a look at black soldier fly larvae. And I'm speaking with Jun Kit. He is the CEO and founder of BioLoop. They utilize the larvae to convert organic waste into valuable protein for aquaculture and animal feeds, which significantly reduces ecological damage and greenhouse gas emissions. Thanks for sticking around, Jun Kit. Now, obviously, black soldier fly larvae have been around for quite some time.
Yes.
People have been farming them for quite some time for different uses. What was it that made you think what local produce, and why did you decide to use palm stuff and as opposed to something else?
Right. So the inception of it, we took from a technology standpoint, and then we took from a what was available to us in Malaysia standpoint.
Right.
So on a technological standpoint, the key technologies, the ones that are super high tech, were all located in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot from them. In the East, we looked at Indonesia, for example, and various parts of Malaysia. Everything was done more or less on the floor. And we thought, hey, you know, why not a bit of both, really? Let's get a cost efficiency of a vertical farm while also maintaining our very nice sort of lower cost environmental privileges that we have in Malaysia. So then we decided a bit of a semi-automated system that we think can outperform either a fully automated one as well as a fully manual one. So that's the sweet spot we like to be in. In terms of palm-based biomass, we didn't actually start with that. We started with the original notion of using food waste,
okay,
which is very rife. You know, food waste, yeah, across the globe is a, yeah, big problem. But because
we were just talking about it just a couple of days ago.
Yes, yeah, food, yeah, waste, you know. And I think in terms of understanding, there was a big evolution of what we could and couldn't use as feedstock for our larvae, what we could feed them with.
Why was that? Sorry to interrupt you.
Not a problem, because we wanted to export our larvae as well as sell them locally. But in order to export them to the nations that we wanted to export them to the European Union, which is, at this point in time, the most lucrative place to go to for this sort of protein. They are very big in sustainability and they're willing to pay the price for it. However, there are very strict rules around what you can and cannot feed your larvae.
Okay, got it.
Food waste is something they classify as post-consumer. Mm-hmm. Whereas we needed pre-consumer plant-based waste. And in Malaysia, that's palm oil. The only way to scale.
Yeah.
So therefore, we then focused in on what are the byproducts in the palm oil industry. And as you know, Richard, palm oil is not seen as the most sustainable industry in Malaysia due to various reasons. And I think our narrative to help these palm oil companies would be, how do you green your supply chain? Mm-hmm. How do we put you up as a part of the circular economy? And this is where we looked at one of the palm-based byproducts that were not being heavily used, quite low in nutrient value, very, very cheap. And we thought, this is what we're going after.
So there's an element of, you scratch my back, I scratch your back.
Exactly. I think if it's not a win-win, it's not going to work.
Mm.
Because if it's only one side of the equation having benefits from it, then what's the point of the other person, the other party helping you? So we needed them to understand the value, and we needed to give them value to realize as well, so that they are aligned to us in the longer term journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you were looking around and you're doing your market research, you know, you said you were looking at stuff that was happening in the West and you were looking at stuff that was happening in Indonesia. How in-depth did your research go to create your farm and your factories?
Right. So we didn't want to fall in the trap of analysis paralysis, where we do too much research, we just don't know what to do. Yeah. So just, you know,
We could do it this way,
Many ways to skin a cat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we just thought, okay, with our current source of funding, we can afford this. And with that source of funding, this is probably the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we went for.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked with local suppliers to do that. And I think that's our advantage, where we can really sort of hone in on local talent, because local talent in Malaysia is everywhere. And they can understand technology very, very well. They just have to bring it to life. So let's talk about China. China is extremely cheap.
Mm.
But during the pandemic, to get it in from China is very difficult. Servicing is very, very hard. But luckily, we met with suppliers who could give us our systems at a fraction of the cost. We definitely asked for quotations from the big boys in the West.
Mm.
Way, way, way too expensive. We did it for a fraction of the cost. And the output was almost exactly the same.
Mm. Did that frustrate you, though?
Not really, because it forces you to become a bit creative.
Right.
So I think if we had it too easy, we won't be resting on our laurels, that's for sure. But we won't be in the same place we are now. We had to be creative to survive. And we had to be creative in our technologies. We had to be creative in how we found new markets as well.
Mm-hmm.
And finding new markets was a big evolution over the pandemic. And I really take my hats off to the companies that set up before the pandemic, before the rise in costs of food.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, last time soybean meal was way cheaper, fish meal was way cheaper. And to even get a foot in the door was super difficult for any alternative protein.
Yeah.
But during a pandemic, things changed. Now, I'm not saying that the BSF larvae at this point in time is cheap, but you get the conversation started because everything else became a bit more expensive. And once the conversation started, people tried using it. Then they saw the value.
Mm.
So it was a big educational journey for our customers and for us as well. So to really tailor make our products so that it fit, for example, in the poultry industry or in the aquaculture industry or the swine or the pet food, because every industry needs slightly different nutrients.
Mm-hmm. So you are located close by, I would assume, you know, palm oil plantations.
Exactly. We are sort of co-located.
Mm.
So there are three main models, I guess, in the BSF industry. So, for example, in Singapore or in London, you get these container models where it's right next to a city or a suburb. And that's where the consumers put their food waste in. It's very much a self-driven community project. Then there is the other end of the spectrum where it's massive mega-scale facilities. And that is possible if you're located also next to a mega-scale waste-producing facility. So, for example, in the Netherlands, there are huge potato peeling factories.
Yeah.
And in France, there are huge corn factories that can give you the amount of waste. In Malaysia, neither model works super well. So we adopted a co-located decentralized model where we sit in a cluster of palm oil mills. Now, palm oil mills are located very sparsely or in very different parts of Malaysia, not in a city, so it's challenging for logistics. Mm-hmm. So when we co-locate, we have to be in the middle of, let's say, 4 or 5 mills to take in all the waste, and that's how we accumulate and achieve some scale. We will never be as big as those mega factories, but it is definitely enough for us to achieve economies of scale for what we want to do.
Junkit, let's take a short break. We'll be right back in a few moments here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Busy following money trail. BFM 89.9.
It is BFM 89.9, The Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury. Welcome back to Open for Business. This is the show that dives deep into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm speaking with Ma Jun Kit, the founder and CEO of BioLoop, a pioneering startup transforming Malaysia's palm oil waste landscape via black soldier fly larvae. Jun Kit, just before the break, we were speaking about your coexistence with palm oil estates. What do you think, though? I mean, looking forward within that industry, it's a bit shaky in terms of how they're perceived overseas. Has that affected your business at all?
I think it has enhanced the business greatly because they have to do something to at least seem more sustainable, right? And because my business in and of itself is a very sustainable one, helping them to manage their waste, upcycle it, put it back as a circular economy product.
Yeah.
They are very excited to somehow get involved. Now, I think the conversation has been extremely positive. We have been getting a lot of inbound calls regarding how we could potentially utilize their waste streams. And even now with various other businesses, you know, turning empty fruit bunches into paper pulp, which has been all over the news lately. I think these are the ways they're really trying to double down on making their processes more sustainable so that they are seen as more, I guess, investable by their overseas peers.
What do you see as some of the biggest hurdles, not just for the palm oil industry, but for, I guess, the waste management sector moving forward, which you are technically a part of.
Part of both, yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you take a step back from palm oil, I think generally the end goal would be to use food waste.
Yeah.
Because in terms of food waste, almost everything gets thrown to a landfill. For palm oil, there are other uses. Some of it can be used for other purposes like animal feed or fertilizer, composting of fertilizer. So it is not completely devoid of usage, whereas food waste is different.
Mm.
So the biggest restriction would be the regulations around using food waste as a potential feedstock for the larvae.
Mm-hmm.
If it is something that's accepted by export markets, fantastic. If you use it in a local market, it's also possible. But what you would need to do is hopefully get the government involved with the collection of food waste. So to operate in this industry, you need scale.
Mm.
And if, let's say, we think about one restaurant producing 100 kilograms of waste, and that's a very bad restaurant on a daily basis. So just for mathematical sake. So for us, we do 20 tons a day of waste. We need to go to 200 restaurants per day, and that is highly unsustainable without government support.
Yeah.
So I guess it has to be a bit of public-private partnerships
where
the government will say, hey, you know, I'll help you collect it, but you manage it for me.
Mm.
And that's essentially what we like to drive towards. Mm. There's actually, in the long run, a third industry that we might want to tap into, which is animal manure. Now, this is sort of a hidden secret. It's an open secret in livestock industries where animal manure is hard to manage. Malaysia is one of the largest chicken consumers per capita in the world. And because of that, we also have a lot of chicken farms and therefore a lot of poultry manure. So this is something that could potentially be addressed with black soldier fly larvae. Now, where's the market? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? What will consumers think about it? So these are the problems that will have to be addressed for this industry to take off further. So palm oil is something that is readily available. Everyone knows about it. Everyone accepts it. That's our first step. We'll then move into food waste and potentially animal manure. So that's how we see the long-term growth of BioLoop heading.
Great, great. Okay, so we've establish what your company is and what they do, the products and services that you offer, the potential ways in which you're going to expand in the future and maybe look at things. We haven't really spoken about money, though.
Right.
And so, obviously, it's an entrepreneurial show. I know you've had dealings with Cradle in the past. And you briefly mentioned to me off air that it was kind of self-funded to start with.
Yes.
Where are you at now in terms of funding? Are you actively seeking funding to expand, or are you in a position now where you're profitable, you're comfortable, you can do it yourselves?
On an operational level, we are profitable. We're very, very happy to say that. So we are going to expand, and we will need future funding. So for our next two projects, we are expanding our volume, and for that, we don't need any future funding. So that will be in the next 24 months, two extra projects. Post that, if we manage to project ourselves as the de facto BSF company in Malaysia, there are actually many parties that are lined up, because this is an industry where government agencies as well as private companies want to show that they are doubling down about sustainability. And Black Soldier Fly is a bit on a hype train right now, let's be honest.
Yes, yes.
Is it here to stay? We are not so sure. We hope it is. But if we are the winner in this industry, then funding will flow very, very easily. So in the meantime, what happens, right? And we've been very lucky to get a significant amount of grants. So from Cradle, we've got some grants from Yayasan Hasanah, from SME Corp, from Bioeconomy Corporation. These are the agencies that have supported us in our journey. And more and more sources of funding are coming online now as well. So Midas Tax Incentive, your Pioneer status, or Bioeconomy Corporation, your Bionexus status for tax incentive. So these are the ways that the agencies try to support fledging young businesses become operationally and financially sustainable.
Do you worry? I mean, you just said, you know, it's on a bit of a hype train right now. Do you worry that the more people become aware of it and the potential of it, that it's going to make your position more difficult?
Absolutely not, in terms of crowding the market, because the animal feed market is too large to even imagine. So if, let's say, all the waste in Malaysia was converted to larvae as animal feed, it still won't even be 20% of the global feed market. So that is, from a demand standpoint, there's exceptionally large demand. Now, what we are scared of with more people coming in are bad actors. When we say bad actors, these are the suppliers of larvae or insect-based products that price their products extremely high. So in terms of the customers that we speak to, the farmers, the end users, they hear many new ingredients every day. And once they hear a bad price, they'll say, you know, I'll never touch it again. I'll never even listen to it. So these bad actors may bump up prices, or they are middlemen who do trading and they bump up prices. And that gives a bad rap for the whole industry. People will say, hey, the BSF industry is just a very expensive one. And we are here to change that, because I think we're very proud to say we're one of the lowest, if not the lowest, producer of EU standard larvae today. So in Malaysia, we are the largest locally owned company in terms of BSF production. And we are also the first company that has achieved both GMP Plus and HACCP, which are two certificates needed to export to the EU. There are other companies in Malaysia, but they are from France, from the UK. So we are proud to say we are the first locally owned company to achieve those.
Okay. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, a few final questions, of course, for Joomkit before we wrap up on this edition of Open for Business. We're right back in a few moments here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bribe-free ministers? BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is BFM 89.9. I'm still Rich Bradbury. It's still Open for Business here on BFM. It is the show that dives deep into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm here with Marjun Kit, the founder and CEO of BioLoop Sendirian Berhad. They utilize black soldier fly larvae to convert organic waste into valuable protein for aquaculture, animal feeds, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Joomkit, I want to talk to you now about, obviously, you're a young entrepreneur who's
getting older.
as are we all. When you started up this business, obviously, with you and your friend at the time, partner, whatever, your discussions would have, I'd imagine, you know, gone down one street, and you would have had these backwards and forwards. And like any startup, mistakes are made along the way,
right,
at the beginning, normally anyway. C- Could you highlight maybe a couple that you made and then rectified to get to where you are today? Because people who are listening at home might be interested in starting their own business and doing their own thing and getting out of, like, what you said, the small cog.
Right.
They don't want to be doing that, you know. So they want to hear about mistakes,
right,
and how to get around them.
Right. We've made so many mistakes. We are continuing to make mistakes, but hopefully these are not irreparable. And the ones we made in the past also luckily have not been irreparable. So I think I can highlight two main mistakes, or I would say oversights.
Mm.
So number one was moving to this business, you know, everyone has to do sort of a financial modeling.
Yeah.
And we modeled our business slightly wrongly. We thought we'd be getting more from the protein, less from the fertilizer. But because we're in Malaysia, the data we had was all overseas data, which operates in an entirely different environment.
It skewed so, your data.
Correct. So yeah. When we actually operated, we thought, hey, we're getting different yields. Hey, our market is totally different with different price points. But very, very luckily, we managed to pull through because in Malaysia, our farmers are all very active in searching for new fertilizers. Mm. And that really made us financially sustainable because they gave us the sort of baseline for operations. Our FRAS, our fertilizer, is really our main selling point.
Oh, really?
So this is slightly different from other insect companies where, you know, they're pushing very hard for protein. For us, we do a bit of both, but our fertilizer market is extremely, extremely strong. We're supported by a large network of durian as well as palm oil plantations.
Did that surprise you?
Very much so. Because actually, it's a bit of both. Because we knew that there was a market, we just didn't know how strong it was.
Mm.
And again, this was really enhanced during the pandemic where urea prices shot up in the ceiling. And then we thought, okay, now is a great time for them to switch. Because we are an insect-based fertilizer, our nitrogen is generally high.
Yeah.
And that is a natural replacement for urea. So that's when our customers began scrambling a bit for FRAS. And then also we learned during the way how to use the product. And this is the second point where we thought our products were, you know, ready to use super easily. So it really depends on what sort of industry you're looking at. For example, poultry. Poultry is well-researched, well-studied. You plug in some nutrients to the software, they'll spit out the recipe for you. But aquaculture was a bit different. Every fish species needed to eat something different.
Right.
So it's unique to the species, and we had to do a lot of research onto a specific fish species. Then we started to really narrow our focus onto, okay, the market is huge, but we're not tackling this entirely huge market. Let's narrow our focus.
Yeah.
Let's become a specialist. So for us, our feed cell was a specialist in palm-based byproducts. And for aquaculture, our specialization would be more towards prawns.
Interesting.
Prawns, which require a very high feed, high protein content in their feed.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doubling down on. So we learned along the way to really narrow our focus onto one specific market, because we're not very big.
Mm-hmm.
We can only serve one market, mm-hmm. but let's serve it extremely well.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you are right now.
Correct.
Now let's look ahead and let's talk about the next couple of years. Is this an industry that you're involved with right now? Do you see it expanding yourselves regionally, or is there enough competition out there that's going to kind of stop you from expanding, you know, regionally?
Well, I really hope it's the former. And how we position ourselves to do that is, as mentioned, by being specialists in what we do. So in palm oil, regionally, let's talk about Malaysia, Indonesia, the two largest palm oil producers in the world. So
yeah.
In Malaysia, there's still a lot of opportunity. So we're in West Malaysia now. In East Malaysia, many, many palm oil mills with waste just waiting to be used. In Indonesia, the logistical network is a bit more difficult. But there are huge, huge mills there that, to our knowledge, doesn't really utilize the waste very well too. So just from the palm oil perspective, there's so much opportunity. But recall just now we were talking a bit about food waste and animal manure. Those are totally untapped markets here in Malaysia. So the possibilities, at least in our opinion, are almost endless. And this is going to be a lifetime business where we're not going to operate for another 5 years, find an exit and leave. We are here to be here in the long term. So the next 30, 40 years or even longer, we have to build the base well, execute well, and then try to tap into the markets we were just speaking about, Richard.
See, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, a lot of people get into these businesses and their end goal is to profit, expand, and then get out. That doesn't seem like what you want to be doing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you genuinely want to be a part of this and see it through.
I think if you didn't genuinely find meaning in it and this didn't drive you, BSF is not an industry you want to be in because it's not a very clean industry. You know,
right.
People of the younger generation would rather work in offices, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't want to be getting their hands dirty. And, you know,
they don't want to be dealing with the smell of black fly larvae.
Exactly. So it is a function of the industry we chose to be in.
Yeah.
So the great thing is, then it self-selects. And there's a bit of bias towards the people that actually choose to be in this industry because they are aware. They know what they're in for. They chose it, correct. So my team, they chose to be here. It was not something that you can just find as in any other company because they had to choose black social fly because, you know, who knows about this industry at this point in time. So they actively seek it out and therefore the motivation they have to see it through is phenomenal. Now, we have to look long term because this is not a platform business. We're not going to have hockey stick growth. It is physical input in, physical output. And that means that we have to work very, very hard. Our processes need to be very, very optimized. For us, I don't think any traditional agricultural company is sustainable just for the short run. I think everyone who's in this business should be trying to play the very, very long game of building it into a sustainable, financially profitable business.
Junkit, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Folks, of course, I have been speaking with Majun Kit, the founder and CEO of BioLoop Sindirian Bahad. If you missed any part of this conversation, highly recommend you go and download the podcast. That's available via our website. And of course, it will be up there in around 35, 40 minutes time. You can also listen to it on our BFM app. That's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.